The headlines, Rishi Sunak is now the UK Prime Minister after meeting with King Charles. Palestinians mourn the victims of the latest Israeli raids in the occupied West Bank. And South Korea and the United States warn of North Korea preparing for an imminent nuclear test. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories at this hour. Rishi Sunak takes office as the new British Prime Minister. He is the third Prime Minister to go into Downing Street in 2 months after his predecessor, Liz Truss, resigned just 6 weeks into her term. Moving on, thousands of mourners take to the streets of Nablus in the occupied West Bank to bid farewell to Palestinians killed by Israeli forces during nightly raids. The mourners denounce the killings as they carry the bodies of the Palestinians they were killed in Israeli raids in the occupied territories as an assault also happened in Ramallah. These incursions also injured around two dozen others. Some of them are in critical condition. This came after Israeli forces assassinated a member of the Palestinian resistance group Lion's Den. The regime forces have upped their crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military has killed over 120 Palestinians in the region this year. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kendall, has given us more details about the latest deadly raids by Israel in the occupied West Bank.
We are speaking about five Palestinians were killed in Nablus during the Israeli military raid to Nablus that aimed to kill or arrest members of the Lion's Den, a group. A sixth Palestinian was killed by Israeli forces, Qusay al-Tamimi. He was killed by the Israeli forces in the town of Nabi Saleh during clashes that took place also between Palestinians and Israeli forces this morning. What happened in Nablus is that Israeli troops claimed that they want to raid Nablus to arrest or to get rid of the members of the Lion's Den group. Number of Israeli forces and armored vehicles were seen raiding Nablus city. Before that, undercover units were spotted by Palestinian security forces, and clashes took place between them and the Israeli undercover unit. Immediately, there were Palestinians from the city and members and fighters from the Lion's Den group engaged in this, in the fighting, with Israeli forces sending even more soldiers to the area. A general strike and a day of mourning had been declared in the city of Nablus and Jenin.
Iran has dismissed as illegal a UN investigation into what it calls baseless allegations of the use of Iranian drones in Ukraine within the framework of Resolution 2231. Iran's ambassador to the UN argues that UN arms embargo on Iran mentioned in the resolution have expired in 2020. He says that this means no Iranian sale or transfer of weapons related to materials other to other countries is subject to the resolution. He made these remarks in a letter to the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. The Iranian diplomat also argued, he urged actually the international body not to act based on anti-Iran allegations by Western countries. On Monday, Tehran announced it is ready to jointly examine with Kiev the claims over the use of Iranian-made drones in Ukraine. France, Germany, and Britain on Friday called for a UN investigation on this issue. Political analyst Marcus Papadopoulos says the West has always defied calls to clarify its arms supplies to various parts of the world and has rejected investigations by international bodies.
If the Western powers have evidence that Iran has either supplied drones to Russia or has shared drone technology to Russia, then the West needs to produce this and show it to the rest of the world. As for the Europeans, the European Union exerts a lot of pressure on countries such as Russia, Syria, and Iran, principally because the United States of America exerts great, tremendous influence inside the European Union. And I do believe that it is fair to say that the Europeans, again, coming under pressure from Washington, are now starting to take a few steps away from the JCPOA. But I want to say that as a firm supporter of the United Nations, the various mechanisms of the United Nations have been penetrated by Western powers who have exploited these mechanisms in pursuit of geopolitical objectives. And secondly, the West has a long tradition of failing or refusing to investigate illegal arms supplies.
Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi says media must protect the independent identity and freedom of nations against encroachments. Raisi says independent media outlets should try to counter attempts by mainstream Western media to impose their own mindset on target societies via fabricated stories. He says these media are engaged in cultural terrorism, which he described as eliminating truth or overshadowing them with side stories. Raisi said such plots by Western media outlets further complicate the mission of independent media outlets. The president was addressing members of the Organization of Asia-Pacific News Agencies who are in Tehran for the Union's 18th General Assembly.
The 18th General Assembly of the Organization of Asia-Pacific News Agencies gathered up members of the media entity in Tehran to discuss new trends in news production and explore areas of cooperation between its members.
So basically, OANA has now become somewhat of a center of world-balanced approach to journalism. Nowadays, it's quite difficult to find media companies outside of Asia and Africa who are looking for a balanced approach to news. Basically, a lot of the major media companies of the world have decided to play only for one side.
I'm from Lebanon's state news agency. I believe this summit provides a platform for media diplomacy between the member news agencies to reach common grounds on world affairs.
OANA currently has 43 members from 35 countries, covering two-thirds of the world population. As a member, the Islamic Republic News Agency, or shortly IRNA, is hosting this year's General Assembly, based on a voting that took place during the 17th OANA Summit in Seoul, South Korea.
Today is a good opportunity for the representatives of prominent news agencies present in Tehran for the OANA meeting to observe the conditions in Iran. An independent media current is needed to disseminate the realities.
Formed in 1961 on UNESCO's initiative, the Organization of Asia-Pacific News Agencies is an association of news agencies from UNESCO member states in the Asia-Pacific region. OANA provides a newswire service containing articles provided by its members. Aside from IRNA, Iran's Fars News and Mehr News agencies are also among OANA members.
Delegates here say OANA's main goal is to break the Western monopoly on media and to present an alternative narrative on regional and global developments, as opposed to, quote, the narrative offered by mainstream media. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
South Korea says the North has completed preparations for its first nuclear test since 2017.
Not only has North Korea openly announced its intentions to preemptively use nuclear weapons, it appears that preparations for a seventh nuclear test have already been completed.
The South Korean president also slammed Pyongyang's recent ballistic missile tests, describing them as a frontal attack on the international community. Yoon also vowed to ramp up cooperation with the U.S. to counter North Korea's missile and nuclear deployment programs. Washington has also echoed Seoul on a likely test by the North. Washington says it is ready to face any threat posed by Pyongyang. The latest deployment comes amid a flurry of missile launches, as well as a muscle flexing on the Korean Peninsula. Pyongyang has test fired several missiles over the past weeks. That is in reaction to joint military drills by South Korea, Japan, and the U.S. The North calls the drills a rehearsal for an invasion. The Chinese President Xi Jinping has made history as he secured a third term as General Secretary of the Communist Party. This makes the 69-year-old the most influential leader in Chinese history since Mao, who founded the People's Republic in 1949. Even though his speech implied that the U.S. is adopting a wrong approach, it comes hot on button issues such as Taiwan and trade. Another source of concern for China is the EU, which claims Xi is continuing a mission to establish China's dominance over East Asia.
China seems to be going through a decisive change towards a one-man ruling system. After several decades of power shifting, President Xi also has total control over the Politburo that he introduced among his closest allies. His power even extends to the military, as he also holds the title of Chairman of the Central Military Commission. In his most recent address to the CCP, President Xi pledged to pursue a very communist idea. He pledged to redistribute wealth to reduce inequality, as well as full employment. He also added promotion of gender equality, expansion of social security and healthcare, protecting the environment, and fighting the cancer of corruption as other items on his agenda. Despite the controversies that mainstream media tried to bring Xi into, China's current and future leader has been able to put the nation on a fast track to dethroning the U.S. as the world's number one superpower. But the U.S. isn't the only country that isn't enjoying the shift of power from west to the east. Josep Borrell, the representative of the European Union, whose recent mildly racist-slash-elitist comments stirred emotions...
Yes, Europe is a garden. We have built a garden. Everything. The rest of the world, and you know very well, Federica, is not exactly a garden. The rest of the world, most of the rest of the world, is a jungle. And the jungle could invade the garden. And the gardeners should take care of it.
Has admitted to the role that China and Russia have played in his garden's prosperity. He said, "I think that the Chinese workers with their low salaries have done much better and much more to contain inflation than all the central banks together." He also said, "Our prosperity was based on China and Russia, energy and market. Clearly today, we have to find new ways for energy from inside the European Union, as much as we can, because we should not change one dependency for another."
The comments by the top EU official shows that the bloc is gradually becoming another challenge for China. This is evident from the fact that the EU has dialed back its once close trade ties with Beijing. After all, China was the EU's number one trading partner. China, meanwhile, has contended with other important challenges as well, most importantly, Taiwan. Xi Jinping has refused to rule out the possibility of using force to unify Taiwan and the mainland.
This is not the first time that Ursula von der Leyen makes inflammatory or accusatory comments about China or Russia. She does still recognize the crucial role that China plays in European economy, though. In the follow-up of the EU-China summit that took place in late June, she said that the EU-China relationship is simultaneously, quote, "one of the most strategically important and one of the most challenging." Regardless of what the EU or the US or the mainstream media says about Xi Jinping, or the numerous criticisms they throw his way, China is not fazed or threatened. China's economic recovery from numerous challenges, including COVID, came much earlier than many big global economies. And so the best market for China's goods has now become China itself. As Borrell said, the EU is reliant on Chinese goods and services, and not the other way around. This is the reason why the EU, despite warning China not to trade with Russia amid EU sanctions, hasn't been able to take any decisive action against the Asian superpower. The U.S. has also tried to undermine China through meddling in Taiwan's affairs. In fact, U.S. President Joe Biden has made his most explicit statement so far on the issue by outright stating that U.S. forces would defend Taiwan in case of a Chinese attack. He was even asked to clarify if he meant whether American men and women, unlike in Ukraine, would defend the island, to which he replied, yes. Despite all the attempts made by US or the EU to undermine China, as Borrell stated, the EU can certainly look for domesticizing production and decreasing its reliance on China, but as it stands, the idea seems more like a distant dream than anything resembling an actual short-term applicable plan to get Europe out of the crisis it's in.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Insight. Welcome to Insight. On this episode, we will be discussing the current crisis in the global economic and financial system with Russian economist Sergei Glazyev. But first, this brief analysis.
Even before the war in Ukraine and the severe Western sanctions imposed on Russia, the global economic and financial system was entering a period of transition. Changes in the relative economic power of nations, particularly those of rising powers in Asia, began to challenge America's global financial and economic hegemony. In the US itself, more than 20 years of permanent global war in the name of fighting terrorism has financially, politically, and morally corrupted America. The financialization of the US economy destroyed US production and has created one of the greatest wealth gaps in history, with tens of millions of Americans living in poverty and hunger, and a handful of oligarchs with unfathomable wealth wasting it on personal pet projects. More than ever before in recent history, the United States is weaponizing economic sanctions, the global banking system, and the US dollar itself to wage economic war against whatever country that is not complying with its orders. This in turn is destroying the credibility of the very global financial system that the United States imposed on the world following World War II. The severe sanctions imposed on Russia by the West have exacerbated this larger historic transition, because for the first time, the majority of non-Western nations did not comply with Western orders to sanction Russia. And Europe is also suddenly faced with a severe crisis because of its dependency on Russian energy and raw materials. For the first time, there are serious efforts to replace the US dollar as the international trade currency, as well as efforts to create new international financial systems independent of the West. New systems which cannot be abused and weaponized by the West to wage economic war on peoples around the world. It's not yet clear how these new global economic and financial systems will look like, but what is clear is that they will be centered in Asia and will be very different than what existed previously.
Dr. Glazev, thank you so much for joining us on Insight. Doctor, you know, it's interesting because you wrote, prior to the Ukraine conflict, you wrote in your books, in your articles, about particular trends that were already occurring in the global economic and financial situation of the world. Things like weaponization of the dollar, things like using and abusing the banking system, that is the Western banking system that is dominated by the West, for political ends, for punishing countries. A lot of these other issues, which are very many, which we can't all list now in our conversation. And you were at that time already predicting that the current financial system in the world, the current economic banking system in the world, is going to change, and that we're going to be going through a transition. And of course, all of this was accelerated by the Ukrainian conflict and the reaction that the West showed to Russia, the sanctioning, the basically stealing of Russian foreign reserves in foreign banks, something that, of course, we as Iranians are very used to. This is nothing new for us. And we welcome you to the club now. So if you could please explain for our audience, in as much detail as possible, what is the current global financial situation dominated by the West that is now coming to an end? Some of the main features of it, some of those main issues as to this current situation, and how is it that we are now transitioning away from this current system and into a new system?
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. I shall try to explain the current situation from the viewpoint of the theory of long-term economic development. I am an expert in this long-term cycles theory, and the present situation is a situation of transition. The world is changing dramatically. It changes both technologically and institutionally. This time, we are going through two transitions. The first transition is technological revolution, the transition to the new technological mode, which means that the economy is suffering from the drastic changes in the technological structure. Each technological structure is the basis for the so-called Kondratiev long wave. Yes. These cycles have 50 years length, and every 50 years we have approximately we have technological revolution. This period is a period of depression in the economy, because the companies, especially in the developed countries, are suffering from the excess of capital in the obsolete industries, mm-hmm. and it takes time to transfer capital from the obsolete industries to the new one. This transition started about 15 years ago, and now it is coming to the end. The new technological mode, which is based on nanotechnologies, information technologies, digital technologies, biotechnologies, bioengineering technologies, and now is formed, and its expansion is going on the with the accelerated growth. The growth rate of this new technologies is about 35% per year. At the same time, we are going through the institutional change. This changes are taking place in with much more longer periods. The Italian scholar and banker Arrighi studied the so-called long-term cycles, or he called this century cycles, systemic cycles of capital accumulations. And each such cycle is based on the specific institutional structure. For instance, during the last two centuries, we have seen the changes from the colonial type of economy, which was based on the huge world powers in Europe, British Empire, colonial empire, French Empire, Russian Empire, and so forth. Those colonial period of capital accumulation is more or less good explanations given by Marx. Mm-hmm. He showed in his papers that the main feature of this kind of economic structure is antagonistic conflict between labor and capital. This colonial period was characterized by the slave trade, by the exploitation of all over the world by the European empires, and there were no any social rights, no trade unions, nothing which could protect workers from the exploitations from the capitalists. This colonial type structure collapsed in the beginning of the 20th century. The First World War and the Second World War were provoked by the British in order to maintain their British Empire as a leader of the world. The point is that this transition period from one cycle to the another cycle usually is going on through the world wars, because the ruling elite of the leading countries do not want any changes. And at that time, 100 years ago, we have seen two world wars. Both were provoked and organized by British, and the Second World War also by the Americans, who made a huge investments in militarization on German Empire. And the idea of these two wars designed by the British was to have a conflict between Russia and Germany in order to prevent their development. At the beginning of the 20th century, Germany and Russian Empire together were in very close relations. And they produced more goods and they were more advanced. They had faster growth rates than British Empire. And it was quite clear that Russian and German Empire, together with Austrian Empire and Ottoman Empire, becomes a new center of the world. In order to prevent this formation of the new center of the world, British provoked the First World War, which destroyed all those empires, and Europe was also destroyed, and British maintained their world leadership till the Second World War. But at the same time, we have seen the Russian Socialist Revolution and the emergency of the principally new institutional structure. It was a structure based on the central planning economy, which was very new, and which demonstrated a huge growth rates. The industrialization and growth rates of not only of industrial production, but of the whole economy in the Soviet Russia was the highest in the world at that time. At the same time, in the United States, another type of this new institutional structure also emerged based on the transnational corporations. From the organizational point of view, the Soviet system and the American system were rather similar. The basic unit in organizational structure was large corporation. In the Soviet Union, it was called ministries, which organized production in this or that industries. In the Western world, they were transnational corporations. For the first time in the history, the governments invented the fiat money, which were used in endless scale. Mm-hmm. The government, the central banks, government central banks, started to print money in those quantities which were necessary to finance investments for economic development. For the first time, we have seen that the monetary limits were overcome. There were no any problems for the finance industrialization in the Soviet Union because the state bank printed as much money as were necessary to finance the growth of productions and investments. The only limits were physical resources. At the same time, in the United States, the Federal Reserve emerged, and Federal Reserves also started to print money in those quantities which were necessary for the American government to finance its budget and to stimulate economic growth. These two principally new, but politically opposite systems, they were common in the way of organization of production, but they were opposite in the political sense. In America, we have seen democracy. In Russia, communist totalitarian state. In spite of the political antagonism, those two systems demonstrated very fast growth, especially the Soviet systems, which didn't suffer from the Great Depression. The Great Britain started to lose its hegemony again. And again, they started to provoke the New World War, again, between Russia, between Soviet Union and Germany. Finally, the war finished with the political results, which was very astonishing for the British, because the British lost the empire, in spite of the fact that they were among the winners. They lost empire because the two superpowers emerged, the Soviet Union and United States, which were much more efficient than the British colonial type state.
That's right.
These large scale corporations and ministries organized production, mass production, in much more efficient way than have been done by the private companies in the British Empire. So British Empire collapsed and the so-called imperial, as we define it, imperial world order began, dominated by the two superpowers. Now this cycle comes to the end. Mm-hmm. First, we have seen the collapse of the Soviet Union about 30 years ago.
Yes.
Now we are looking for the collapse of the United States. The Soviet Union collapsed because the central planning economy was very rigid, and it didn't satisfy for the needs of the science and technological progress. This was very a bureaucratic system which reject innovations. And finally, the Soviet Union began to go down in technological competition. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the United States becomes the only one leader. But this leadership was not forever, because the American system today is based on the creation of the fiat capital, which has no limits. You see, each this, according to the Arrighi studies, each one-century cycle of the accumulation of capital has two phases. The first phase is material expansion. The new system of management, the new more efficient institutions give opportunity for those countries which use these institutions to become the leaders in the industrial production, in the real sector. But after two generations, the leadership in industrial sector transfers to the leadership in the financial sector. Mm-hmm. And the second half of this century is the financial expansions. Financial expansion of American capital now have such a scale that the efficiency in the rail sector simply doesn't matter. During the last 10 years, maybe 12 years, the amount of dollars in the world economy increased about four times. At the same time, we see that in China and in India emerge the new technology, a new economic system, which have much more complicated structure, which combine the central strategic planning with the market competition mechanism. The government control the money circulation through the government, through the state banking system. And at the same time, the private entrepreneurs, the private companies has access to the endless credit facilities, but they get this access only in those spheres which increase the production of the goods which have consumer demand. So this combination of central strategic planning and private markets and companies' competition gives new opportunities for the economic growth. The government creates, the central bank, government central bank create money. The government controls the circulation of this money. It's do in such a way to avoid the speculations. They give opportunity to the private companies have a long-term credits, maybe half, 0.5 interest rate, even 0.2 interest rates, which are provided by the government banks for those companies which are able to produce more goods and give more opportunities for economic growth. And the government at the same time block the speculations which undermine the economic stability. For this reason, almost all money which are created by the state are going to the rail sector. Mm-hmm. And today we see that monetization of the Chinese economy about two times higher than American economies. Almost the amount of money which were created by the Chinese state bank during the last 12 years increased about three times. But this money was not going to the financial speculations as in the United States. It was going to the production sector. And we see that Chinese corporations like Huawei, let's say, or Xiaomi, or China Construction, or Power Engineering Company, becomes the huge built corporations. They were created, especially in private sector, like Huawei or Xiaomi, they were created just from nothing, from private cooperatives, which are growing up very fast because the government support these companies with the cheap credits. But at the same time, the government control with the use of the money. It's avoid the capital flight. The currency control is very strong. The yuan, RMB, is convertible only for current transactions, for trade, but it is not convertible for the capital transactions. The capital flows are controlled by the government. And all this monetary mechanism is designed in such a way to promote investments. You see, the Chinese, as well as Indian and maybe Iranian mm-hmm. financial system, has a clear goal to finance, first of all, new investments, to finance the growth of production, which is quite different from the American and Western system, where the money are created for the needs of the financial oligarchs. They print exactly. money
exactly.
In huge quantities without taking care where this money are going. The main idea to get super profits. For this reason, they create various derivatives, which in fact are pure speculative instruments. And these financial bubbles concentrate about 80% of the whole money created by the Federal Reserve. And the mechanism which we see at the moment in the West financial mechanism is going through the turbulence, it becomes very turbulent. Every 10 years, we have the financial crisis. And there is completely, almost no economic growth. There is no growth of the real income of the population. So American and European economy is in stagnation. At the same time, the Chinese and Indian economies are growing up very fast. So the world economy is switched to the new center in the South, East Asia. We see the new world economic center, which dominates now in the world economy by the growth rates. More than 50% of the growth of the world economy is the growth in those Asian countries. This center is much more efficient. It wins economic competition. And the Pax Americana is going to the end, not because Chinese and Indian economies are growing up so fast, not because they were in miserable situation before. They are growing up very fast because they have much more efficient system of management, much more efficient institutional system. So this new type of economic organization combines the central planning for central strategic planning and private entrepreneurs. We call this type of state as integrative state or integrated world economic mode, because the main function of the state is the combination of the interests, the harmonization of the interests of various social groups. The American style system is designed for the needs of the financial oligarchy.
Exactly.
The American system protects property rights for the large capital, and they don't care about the workers, about the population as a whole. And for this reason, we see the huge social differentiation, which finally go into the political destabilization, which we have seen during the last presidential elections in the United States.
Exactly.
As for the new type of the state in Asia, we see the socialist ideology. We see the huge role of the moral standards. The state is responsible before the people. The main idea of the economic policy is the growth of the incomes and living standards of the population. So this combination of the socialist ideology, of the traditional values, of market mechanism and central strategic planning, government control over the money creation, shows the huge efficiency, and it is no doubt that the last part of the present century will be dominated by the competition between China and India. Unfortunately, cost about 100 million people killed in the two world wars organized by the British Empire. And now the American financial and ruling elite is trying to maintain its leadership, starting the new world war. We call this war hybrid war, because the main front lines in this war are going in the financial sector, in the economic and trade sector, in information technologies, and only the final stage, they use the military power in order to press opposition and in order to finalize the expansion in the financial and economic and information sectors. But this is the real world war, because the idea of this world war, hybrid world war, is from the American side, is to maintain its world hegemony. And they don't care about other countries. Those countries which are not controlled by the United States are going through the culture, through the color revolutions. Exactly. The Americans are trying to undermine political stability. In those countries which they do not have control, they introduce various methods for chaotization of those countries. They provoke wars between countries. The main idea of them was to provoke the war between Russia and China. Fortunately, it didn't happen. Now the Russia and China have strategic partnership. And because the China is too large now, and American lose the economic competition with China, they're trying now to press Russia, to undermine Russia, to destroy Russia, in order to improve its position in the world by means of controlling the Russia natural resources and to prevent the growth of China. So American plan today has three stages. The first one, to destroy Russia, because, the Russophobia is one of the long-term, have deep roots in Anglo-Saxon geopolitics.
Exactly.
The whole geopolitics theory of the 19th century, designed by the English and Germans, was the some quasi-science how to destroy the Russian Empire. It was the main headache of the Western geopoliticians to find methods how to destroy the Russian Empire. And the Ukrainian crisis, the war today in Ukraine, happened according to the recommendations of their geopolitical theory, starting from Bismarck and then following with Brzezinski. They stressed a lot of times that in order to destroy Russia, first of all, you have to get away Ukraine from Russia, because the formula of Brzezinski was that Russia without Ukraine couldn't be the superpower. And all this Russophobia, which was have deep roots in the Anglo-Saxon geopolitics, now played a key role. Why the United States use Russia as the main goal, to maintain the world hegemony. And Ukrainian provocation was prepared on the systemic basis during the 20 years, especially the last 8 years. They trying to control Ukraine. As you know, they organized the coup d'etat in Ukraine. The Ukraine during the last 8 years do not have independent government. This territory is totally controlled by the CIA and other American and British organizations. And the first stage for them is of this hybrid war. In fact, hybrid war began with the sanctions against Russia in 2014. And then the second stage was the economic war with China, where the American used the same methods as the British Empire used in the 30s, when British Empire prevented the access of American goods to their empire in order to get more compatible position in comparison with the United States. Now the United States did the same. They launched the trade war with China in order to maintain their markets and in order to limit the growth of China, but they failed in this war. Nowadays, they used sanctions against Russia. They intervened, in fact, in Russia military and cultural space. They are trying to destroy Russia with various information technologies and trying to use to provoke the war in Ukraine in order to undermine the Russian government. They want to chaotize Russia. And second, they want to destroy Iran. They do this. They're trying to do this permanently during the last 20 years. And their final goal is China.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Until the next time on Insight.
Faqh or Jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asle zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech on iRibe English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Ranjbar. Stay tuned. According to the Holy Quran, all the people will be on the edge of hellfire. Yet, those who did evil deeds will enter it, and the righteous ones will pass by it. In other words, the hellfire will take some away with itself. So if you did good deeds in this world, you will not be absorbed by the hellfire. Thus, when we ask for Imam al-Husayn's mercy on the day of entrance, we mean that Allah saves us from the hellfire on the edge of which we are passing on the day of judgment. If Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam mediates for us on the day of judgment, then we can be taken to heaven instead of hellfire. Therefore, if we want to understand the language of the Quran, we have to first understand its wording. The term warid means entering in Farsi language, but it means to be on the verge of or on the edge of in the Quranic wording. Even the people of heaven will be on the edge of hellfire. However, because of the grace of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they will reach paradise. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRibe English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Ranjbar. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.